Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus King coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. We had a little bit of a late start today, had a little trouble connecting. We're having some nasty weather here in upstate New York, but we still managed to connect, so let's get right to it. This week's Raw begins with the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes, coming out to ringside and warming up the crowd a little bit and saying that it's, of course, time for him to finish his story. This leads to Drew McIntyre coming out and comparing their careers to one another, even going so far as to say, you know, we were a tag team, we had a similar path, we left, we sort of reinvented ourselves. They had a pretty good exchange in which Drew McIntyre even mentioned that Cody Rhodes had worked with CM Punk in a different capacity more recently without actually mentioning AEW. Had a pretty good exchange in which Cody had pointed out, we're not really that similar, because while everything you say is somewhat true, I got my second chance and I appreciate it, and I don't let it keep me down, and I don't blame it on other people. Whereas everything that happens to you, you blame on someone else. Well, I mean, listen, this is what they're trying to do with Drew McIntyre. They're trying to make Drew McIntyre this gray area character where you say, technically, he is right. Everything he is saying holds some merit. He was ripped off of the title. He did carry the WWE through the pandemic era. He did win the championship, but not in front of an audience. Yes, Damian Priest did screw up the match last week. Everything he's saying holds water. The problem that I see is Cody Rhodes then doesn't hold a lot of water, because he blamed Seth Rollins. When he first came into the Federation, he blamed Seth Rollins. I'm not getting my title shot because of this. I'm not getting my title shot because of that. I demand a title shot against Roman Reigns, and he won't fight me. And then he blamed that I technically. Now, to his credit, he did not blame his loss at WrestleMania on the fact that everyone attacked him. He did say, I'm not going to go there. I lost. That's it. Can't say he's never complained. So a little bit of that doesn't hold water. And I'm not really sure. This came off a little weird, and I'll tell you why, in my opinion. Drew McIntyre didn't really say anything to instigate Cody that much, and then Cody sort of got really snappy quickly with it. And I think it would have worked better if Drew McIntyre triggered him some way by saying something that you say, oh, well, McIntyre kind of had that coming. For Cody Rhodes to really go to where he went with Drew McIntyre, I'm not 100% sure. It felt like Cody Rhodes was being the face that he normally is in that exchange. And then to even point out, well, yes, we did have that last match, and guess who won? That sounds kind of petty, because didn't you say we both reinvented ourselves? What does it matter then? How many matches did Cody Rhodes lose? How many matches did Cody Rhodes lose before he left and went to AEW? Cody Rhodes was a punching bag. So that, I don't feel that was as well written as it could have been. This could have been a great exchange where Cody Rhodes could have said, I think Cody Rhodes should have said what Drew McIntyre was saying. Drew McIntyre should have came out to say, look, you know, you're going to be champion one day. It's not going to be this time, because I am going to win the Rumble. Then if Cody had have said, you know, we're very similar. We both reinvented ourselves. We both did this, that, and the other thing. We both had our problems. The difference is I'm not complaining and you are. It would have worked better than Drew McIntyre bringing that up. Still wasn't a bad segment. And I think it shows that both guys can use the mic very well. But Mike, I just thought that the emotion here was a little misplaced at times, and that's why it didn't work 100% for me.
Right, and this is not Drew or Cody's fault. It's I don't want to say Triple H's fault. I don't know who exactly wrote this opening. You know, was it Triple H? Was it whoever he has on his writing crew? But I don't know who it was, but like you said, some of the stuff that was said should have been said by the other guy. You know, some of the stuff that Drew McIntyre said should have been said by Cody, and the other stuff should have been said by, you know, if they would have just flipped those two halves of that interview, you know, of that opening, they would have had probably a near opening for me.
You know what, Mike? I would have done it exactly the opposite. I would have had Drew McIntyre come out first and start bitching and complaining about stuff, and then have Cody come out. Because then Cody could have came out as the real good guy saying, Drew, what the hell is going on? You know as well as I do that we all go through this same thing. Nobody knows it any better than me. Look what happened to me at WrestleMania. At least you won at a WrestleMania. At least you carried that belt. Look what happened to me, and you didn't see me the next night go out there and blame it on Jey Uso and Jimmy Uso and Solo and a million other things, the loss at, for what it was, and said, I'll get back to the point where I get another shot. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. That's the difference between you and me. Then if Drew wanted to say, look, you are going to get your opportunity. You are going to probably finish your story. Just not going to be this year. Because I've had enough of this. I've had enough of always being, you know, a day late and a dollar short. It's not going to happen, Cody. And as much as I respect you, this is my time. And if my time's not now, I don't know when it is. You'll have your time, not this time. Then I would have said, this is a lot better. Now, having said that, the WWE's done a very good job of giving us some potential winners for Royal Rumble, even though the smarter of the smart fans kind of understand there's only probably two people who can win it. On paper, there are several. And usually that's not the case for the Royal Rumble, so I'm going to give him credit for that. I just think this would have been a much better segment had they put a little more effort into why someone would be angry, why someone would be trying to calm someone down. And I thought whoever wrote that last closing spot where Cody Rhodes, after saying you can't be petty and you can't be whatever and you can't be glomming on the past, does exactly the opposite and says, well, who won the match between us, the last match we had? Like, that matters at all. When he just got finished saying it's a whole new me and a whole new Drew McIntyre. So, yeah, a little bit of a problem there with the writers, but it still was an okay segment, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, that opening last night with Drew McIntyre and Cody Rhodes there, it was an okay opening, but like you said, I would have Drew McIntyre to come out first, then Cody, and to confront him and everything. But the one thing about that, they may look real. These facts they're saying.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they did as best a job they could with the material that they were given. I just think that the material that they were given had some holes in it, had some flaws in it. It's an average age. Damian Priest ends up confronting R-Truth because R-Truth is selling bootleg Judgment Day T-shirts. And he says, you cannot be out here selling bootleg Judgment Day T-shirts with your name on it. The Judgment Day members are already as pissed off at you as they can be. And this is not going to help. And then he literally gives Damian Priest a lot of money and says, well, this is your cut. And then Damian Priest says, well, okay, well, in that case, go ahead and keep selling them, But just, you know, keep it quiet. And whatever you do, do not tag in to the match you have with me and Finn. And R-Truth seems to not understand what he means. He winks and says, oh, I get it. Don't tag in. Nod, nod, wink, wink. And Damian Priest just frustratedly walks away, not knowing whether he understands him. He doesn't understand him. What the hell's going on with him? All he knows, he's got a pocket full of money. This segment, I thought, was very, very good, Mike. But I think this segment, more than any other segment, clearly underlines what I've said for a month now, and that is they are trying to soften up Damian Priest because I believe that the Judgment Day is going to be turning on him very, very soon.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. And of course, we'll get to what happened with Mommy later. But they're softening him up. And hey, you know, any time you can get, I've said it before with R-Truth, anytime he does segments like this, they always turn out to be gold. And this was no different. I mean, he hands him a goddamn wad of money. Here's your cut, you know. I mean, that's hilarious there. I mean, he is a utility player. And when R-Truth decides to retire, we're going to miss him.
Yeah, R-Truth, you know, some people can say, you know, his humor is kind of Monty Python-ish weird, you know, with the Tom and Nick Mysterio thing and stuff, but it's always interesting, and the thing is it plays into other characters well. For instance, what they're trying to show is a guy like Finn Balor, J.D. McDonagh, and Dominic Mysterio really have no sense of humor. It's all about let's just rule and whatever, where Damian Priest is saying, it's hard not to like this guy. I mean, he's not really harmful, doing anything terrible to us. As a matter of fact, he's earning money, as he pointed out later. He's actually making some money for us, which, you know, McDonough's not doing. You know, maybe we're just too hard on him. This is how you use this. This is a very brilliant way of how you use a utility player to affect your main roster guys. This is a lesson for everyone who writes how you can use a minor character to change the fates of major characters. And it's something wrestling doesn't do enough, Mike, and now we're seeing how R-Truth can be useful in that aspect.
Right, and much like Cody Rhodes, no, much like Dustin, Rhodes, you look at him, he don't look like he's in his mid-50s or early 50s, all right? He looks probably 15 to 20 years younger than that, R-Truth. So, I mean, that's the point. We talk about people that don't look the part like CM Punk. R-Truth looks the part.
There's no question about that. No question about it. Really good segment, I thought. So this was solid as far as I was concerned. Well, we then get Dominic Mysterio and J.D. McDonagh making their entrance. They're going to fight DIY. Man, Dominic and McDonagh have literally just been like the B-squad now of the Judgment Day. I'm really not happy with what they're doing with Dominic for a while. Was arguably their top heel. And now you're literally putting him in a position where he is literally just a B-squad tag team that gets run out there before the Judgment Day fight somebody. They put on a great match. Nothing wrong with the match, but there was absolutely no doubt in my mind. Of course DIY is going to win because they are going to set up DIY for a shot at the tag team championships against Finn Balor and Damian Priest. So it's a shame that they're being used this way, Todd, but still a very strong match, I thought.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, this is kind of like called the job squad, back in the 90s. They make them make tag teams like guys McDonough and Dominic Mysterio and two jabronis and jobbers. And I like you said, I actually feel bad for Dominic Mysterio not getting the top heel card.
Yeah, push that he should. And here's the thing. You've totally undermined what you started in the relationship between J.D. McDonagh and Finn Balor. I thought they were very, very close friends. Well, why is he throwing out McDonagh out there constantly then? You know, the idea, I thought the idea was going to be they were going to push Damian Priest out and it was going to be Finn and McDonagh. And they were going to be the tag team. And that's really how it should be. Let Dominic do the stuff on his own. You'll notice that Rhea Ripley does not come out with Dominic anymore either. They are trying to separate them as much as they possibly can. I haven't seen Rhea Ripley come out with Dominic in ages, and she was there. So here we go. I think the Judgment Day thing is pretty much on its last legs, but I guess we'll see what happens. Anyway, we saw a little backstage thing that was supposedly recorded earlier where Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell had a run-in with Adam Pearce. Chelsea Green and Piper Niven end up coming in, and they want a rematch. So they end up pretty much booking a match against these two. I don't know what to tell you about this. I see nothing in Candice LeRae in – since she's come to the main roster, that indicates she's older or that she can get old. I see nothing in Indy Hartwell Kate, she can get old. I don't know. I think this was the wrong choice. I think your team that people care about, whether it's they hate them or they like them, is Chelsea Green and Piper Niven. And I know they want to bring other challengers in and they want to establish new teams, and that's fine. But I think that there's no, I don't know. There was chemistry with those two in NXT. I don't feel the chemistry here in WWE, Mike.
Right. I don't feel it as well. And that brings me back to you look at Chelsea Green and Piper Niven. I mean, we've speculated on what they want to do with Chelsea Green, right? They at some point they're going to figure out, well, she needs to be on her own. She's better on her own, but how is that going to affect Piper Niven? Will Piper Niven continue to step up, right? Then there's that. And as far as DIY, well, at least they kept what's his name took another pin. McDonagh took the pin, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
So he made everybody look good, and he took the pin. You know, so that figures because they got split. We talked about they're gonna split that group up. It's coming, and it's probably coming relatively quick.
The thing that gets me about this is if you're gonna do that, you got to make McDonagh look tough. Otherwise, why would they even want to keep him in the group? You never win. They'd be the first ones to say, well, I don't know, man. I mean, you haven't won a thing. Every single time we send you out there, you eat the pin, screw things up, whatever. We don't need you in the group. Why is this big push if he has to stay? R-Truth has been more successful than J.D. McDonagh. So it's a little weird. I thought what was going to happen is McDonagh was going to end up being like a little bit of a pit bull. And him and Finn were going to start to get real chummy and less so with Damian Priest, and that was going to lead to a divide. But that's not what they're doing, obviously, so we'll have to wait and see what the hell they're doing. Anyway, then we get the backstage segment with the Judgment Day, where Rhea Ripley basically doesn't want anything to do with Damian Priest much. And when he's asked where he's been, he says he went and talked to Adam Pearce, and, you know, they need to take care of Drew McIntyre. And then McDonagh says, well, you know, why aren't we taking care of R-Truth? What about R-Truth? And then Priest pulls out the money and says, you know, look, he's doing something where he's actually making money for us. Now, the funny part is JD asks if he gets a cut, and Damian Priest says, probably not, which is pretty funny. Then they just kind of make amends and say, look, we need to concentrate on our match. We can't worry about whatever, and that's fine. That's a good segment. That was a good, strong segment. It also underlines what I said, which is that it's not going to be long until this faction is done, or a different rendition of this faction without Damian Priest. Anyway, Gunther comes out with Ludwig Kaiser and declares he's going to be in the Royal Rumble. Well, good, and I hope they set him up for a situation. Looks like they're going to with Bronson Reed. Hope they set him up in a situation where a feud is started because of this Royal Rumble, but he's not winning it. A sitting champion's not winning it. So, you know, it's sort of a waste for him to declare. I would have loved to see Gunther get screwed out of his title somehow and then declare for the Royal Rumble, because then I would have said, you got a chance. He's got a chance, because they might want to push him as a major champ. So it would have been better if he didn't have the title. Now that he has the title, we already know it's not going to happen. We then get to a really barn burner match between Xavier Woods and Ludwig Kaiser that I thought was a very, very strong match. It was a victory for Ludwig, I think, because Woods grabbed that steel chair and basically drop-kicked it into his face. I'm beginning to think that Big E is ready to come back, because this is starting to make me think, well, he's taken out Kofi. Xavier Woods didn't get the job done, but something's going to happen to Xavier Woods. I'm starting to think what we might end up seeing in this Royal Rumble is Gunther thrown out by Big E, a returning Big E, and leading up to possibly a WrestleMania match, Big E versus Gunther, Mike.
I would love to see that, and that's the thing. I mean, and look, you not only get that match, but you get, especially when Vinci comes back, you get several, you know, maybe a couple of six-man matches with the New Day and the these guys, you know. So yeah, I can see that, and I can see Big E. Now, granted, there are things that say, well, there are rumors that Big E is not as far along as they'd like him to be and all that stuff, but we'll see. You know, if he does show up, if he's a surprise entrance to the Royal Rumble, you know, then we know.
Yeah, you know, it just feels like a WrestleMania thing, doesn't it? It just feels like that's going to be something special. If Big E shows up at even if he doesn't enter the Royal Rumble, but he somehow eliminates Gunther, he comes out and, you know, illegally eliminates Gunther or something, starts that feud, that feels like a big moment. The return of Big E feels like a big moment. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen soon, because it seems like they're trying to edge it that way. At least that's the way it feels to me, Todd.
Well, you're absolutely right. Like you said, I was like thinking last night, Big E's going to come back, and like you said, if it's not going to come back last night, I'm going to say Royal Rumble or something. And like you said, that would be a great feud with Big E and Gunther there. You got Gunther doing the anti-American thing, and you got Big E doing like a real American thing right there.
And of course, the revenge for all the stuff that's happened to the New Day. Now, backstage, obviously, Ludwig Kaiser and Xavier Woods, they get into the beatdown thing again. There's going to be another match there, obviously, or at least a little bit of a feudy thing if they're in the Royal Rumble. We see where that's going. We then get Akira Tozawa versus Ivar. And literally, to my amazement, Akira Tozawa wins this match. A little help from Maxine. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. I don't think Ivar should be distracted by her shaking her butt. I think he's supposed to be too you know, bloodthirsty and whatever to be like, ooh, a lady. You know what I mean? That would be something that you could maybe do with, like, a Grayson Waller or an Austin Theory or, you know, somebody like that. I don't know about the Ivar thing, but I still think a tremendously good idea. A lot of people wrote me and said, oh, my God, after all this hype they gave Ivar, they let Akira Tozawa beat him. No, this actually is a good thing. Number one, it didn't hurt Ivar because afterwards he just destroyed Akira Tozawa. And Valhalla, by the way, destroyed Maxine, which I believe is going to be the beginning of Valhalla feud with Maxine and maybe leading to, as we've seen, a feud with the Creed team. So that'll be interesting. I don't think it hurt Ivar. I think just squashing Tozawa would have done nothing for Ivar anyway. And having this upset victory and leading to Valhalla attacking Maxine and Ivar flattening Akira Tozawa anyway and making it look like, you know, I could have pancaked him at any time. I was toying with him and got burnt. Is more effective. I just think it's more effective. And it puts more branches on the tree. So I don't think this is a bad loss. Now, normally, if Akira Tozawa just flat-out beat Ivar, there's no interference, there's no nothing, just beat him, then I would have said, boy, that takes the shine off Ivar, doesn't it? But that's not what happened, folks. What happened was Ivar was momentarily distracted. Akira Tozawa hit him with one good move, got a quick three count, and then got squashed like a bug. I don't know. I don't think this one hurts Ivar. I think this just helped put branches on a tree, Mike, so I was fine with it.
And look, go back and look at that match and look at how he wrestled that match, how Tozawa wrestled that match. He's 180 pounds soaking wet, if that. What's his name? He's a 300-pound beast, right? So, and what did he do? Tozawa was the movement guy. He threw kicks, but when he was throwing his kicks, he was throwing two and three and four kicks at a time, right? The way he should have been doing. So, look at, and they could play this up with the whole thing and say, look, he's learned a lot from Chad Gable. This helps Chad Gable, though, too.
I think it helped Chad Gable. Again, branches on the tree. You now have Chad Gable fighting Ivar next week. Tozawa has been uplifted a little bit because he's got a victory. Maxine and Valhalla are into something maybe that's going to have to be settled. There's a lot of branches on the tree now. It was a lot better than just a squash match victory for Ivar. I think it puts everyone in a better position, Todd.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, like you said, that match last night with Kea Tozawa and Ivar, you know, like you said, I would have the Kea Tozawa just win, not without a distraction from the help of Maxine.
Well, no, you can't have him win without distraction. You can't have Akira Tozawa just win that match because then that does kill Ivar. To have something happen in which it's just an upset, it's one of those fluke things that happen. Ivar then destroys him, proving, look, I could have beat this guy at any time. I just screwed around, and unfortunately, he got lucky shot. And then it starts obviously Maxine and Valhalla into what could be a short feud, although it looks like Ivy Nile may stick her nose in that. I don't know. But all I know, Mike, is there's much more branches on the tree the way they handled it than if Ivar just squashed it.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. That's the one I was thinking about. Ivy Nile and, man, we talk about Valhalla all the time and how she's not your typical female, her look, everything. Not just the gimmick she's doing, but her look in general is not your typical you know, female wrestler, right? You know,
right.
She's got the same look that originally the man had, you know. So yeah, she's got a different look, and that's gonna be. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if you maybe get a three-way out of this thing.
It's very possible. Like I said, the way they handled the booking of this, some people are mad, saying they threw Ivar under the bus. They didn't. Ivar now has a much better program to work with, and everybody involved now sort of has something going on. So I think it was a great move. Anyway, we get to Rhea Ripley, and Rhea Ripley comes out, and here's the thing. This was poorly written, too, because Rhea Ripley says, I have bigger things to do. I got to go address the situation in the women's division. Then she comes out and doesn't say anything more than she ever said. She just said that Nia Jax runs around like she owns the division, and she doesn't. And whoever wins the Royal Rumble better not waste their time on her because they just lose. And then Becky Lynch comes out. I guess this was the only reason they wanted her to do this, so Becky Lynch could come out. I don't even like what Becky Lynch said. Becky Lynch says, well, I don't know. You know, I have that feeling you might be better than me, so I have to test myself, and I'm going to win the Royal Rumble, and I'm gonna challenge you. And Rhea Ripley says, well, you're the one I want at WrestleMania. Becky Lynch should have came out and said, pin you in War Games? Do I recall pinning you? Because I think I did. Remember that? At least we would have had something. You say you haven't been pinned, nobody's beaten you. I have beaten you. No, it wasn't a one-on-one match. That's why I want the one-on-one match. But you know I can do it. Deep down inside, you know I can beat you. It shouldn't have been Becky Lynch saying, I think deep down inside you might be better than me. It should have been Becky Lynch saying, deep down inside, Rhea, you know I'm better than you. I'm not stronger than you. I may not be as impressive looking as you, but deep down inside, when you take off all of this wardrobe and makeup and everything else and you look yourself in the mirror, you know I'm better than you. That would have been good. And then Rhea Ripley should have said, you know what? You're the one I want to win the Royal Rumble. Because whether you're right or whether you're wrong, Becky, I'm going to prove that I am better than you. Would have been much better than the other way around. Once again, I just think this is writer's fault. It was okay, Mike, but again, I think the motivations were weird, and I sort of think that some of the dialogue was reversed.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. And you know, but again, what stands out with this is that this wasn't an antagonistic interview, a thing, and obviously her face turn is in full steam, or else they wouldn't have had is in full bloom, you know. In other words, that you wouldn't have had Becky Lynch come out and do this promo the way she did the promo. Yeah, with all his with his problems, but I'm just talking about the promo as a whole. And as it relates to Rhea Ripley's face turn.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head, Mike. And that is, I don't think they ever would have made Becky Lynch say that unless Rhea Ripley was flipping. I think that statement, you might be better than me, is the nail in the coffin of Rhea Ripley is going to be a face soon. That's the reason they didn't have Rhea Ripley say it. It would have made more sense right now if Rhea Ripley said it, or didn't, if Rhea Ripley had said, you know, I had my doubts, and that's why I want to quash those doubts at WrestleMania. I don't doubt I can beat Nia Jax. I don't doubt I can beat the rest of this division. You're right. There's a little bit of doubt in my mind. Am I better than the man? Well, I have to find that out, don't I? And to find that out, you got to win the Royal Rumble, so I hope you do. That would have been cool. But I think you're right. I think that's why they had Becky Lynch do it, so that when the flip happens, she's the one that Becky Lynch has kind of said might be even better than me, right? Yeah, that's probably true. Okay, so let's see. We get to Rollins is interviewed backstage, but nothing really happens major there, so we'll just pass on that. R-Truth comes out with a Judgment Day, even though he's the Miz's partner. The Miz has to remind him, by the way, wait a minute, you're on my team. He ends up dropping all kinds of money when he's trying to get Finn Balor and Dominic their cut of the bootleg T-shirts. I thought the reactions here was pretty good, where Finn Balor was really arguing about R-Truth and blah, 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 and then the minute R-Truth starts to give him the money, he's like, oh, okay, well, never mind. And then Dominic also takes his money, and he's happy. And JD is saying, where's my cut, where's my cut? And you hear Finn say, make sure that money goes in my jacket, which is weird because he's supposed to be JD's best friend and apparently doesn't trust him. But anyway, I thought this was handled very well. It was a pretty good match. Again, The Miz took the most of it, but Damian Priest finally has to give the South of Heaven to R-Truth. He doesn't look like he's happy about it. Once again, this is your clue that Damian Priest is going to be a face soon. He does not look happy that he has to give that South of Heaven to R-Truth. But he does, pins him, that's it. This match was basically just to hammer through that R-Truth is definitely softening Damian Priest is definitely softening to R-Truth, and that his rift within the Judgment Day is growing bigger and bigger and bigger by the week, Mike.
Absolutely, and that's the thing is, The only thing I'm waiting to happen is that eventually they're going to bring back Bad Bunny.
Yeah,
and I see that happening. Yeah, it's going to happen, yeah.
Yeah, that definitely could happen. It's an okay match. Once again, you know, The Miz is underrated in my opinion, Todd. There are times when the people get really down on The Miz. Mike has said about utility players, you can use The Miz in almost anything. You want him to be a top heel, he's a top heel. You want him to be a top face, he's a top face. You want him to just put somebody over and make, you know, start a feud in a different whatever, he's your utility player, you can go in there and do that. You want him to just be a talk show host and get things stirred up, he can do that. He has a ton of different things he brings to this federation. And this is another guy that when he's no longer around, I think people are going to realize how good he was.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, The Miz could play anything. With his expressions on his face, he doing like an Eddie Guerrero thing. He could play a face, he could play a heel, he could do anything. He could be funny, he could be serious. He's got that little Eddie Guerrero syndrome in him.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I did want to, before we go on with anything else, I did want to say that the situation with the CM Punk thing is getting ridiculous. Either he's going to wrestle or he's not. He's been in this federation how long now, and he's wrestled in Madison Square Garden that nobody saw. That's it. He comes out, says a few words on a microphone, goes home. Doesn't show up, goes home. Whatever it happens to be, it's absolutely ridiculous at this point. Yet he's going to go into the Royal Rumble and be one of the last guys there. And this is why I'm telling you, don't like CM Punk. Not willing to work for any of it. Just, I'm going to do the bare minimum I possibly can, but I better be the top guy. Well, you got to earn that spot. If you're Brock Lesnar, you earned that spot. CM Punk did not earn that spot. Roman Reigns earned that spot. CM Punk did not earn that. But he's being treated like he is. I see Logan Paul more than I see CM Punk. So I just think that's disgraceful, really, and it's really aggravating. And I noticed that the CM Punk chants start up, but they quickly end. It's now it seems to be a smattering of the fans. I don't think the popularity is there anymore. Not to the extent that I think the WWE thought it was going to be. Anyway, Natalya and Tegan Knox versus Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark. Now, again, they're looking for tag teams that can compete and be legit tag teams. Natalya and Tegan Knox does not feel like a tag team. Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark does. But unfortunately, Zoe Stark, I think, is far better on her own. Can't think of anything for Shayna Baszler to do. I get it, but I think Zoe Stark's wasting her time, Mike, when she could be right up there as one of the top people in the women's division.
I think so, too. And I think they've so mishandled Shayna Baszler. I mean, Shayna Baszler could be the female Brock Lesnar. That it doesn't matter whether she wins or loses. You're going to get your butt whipped when you face her, right? You know,
yes.
That she could be that person if they'd handle her right.
Mike, you could not be more right. Think about this. Let's say they had handled Shayna Baszler right, and Shayna Baszler was exactly like she was in NXT, breaking people's arms, bullying people. She's stronger than them. She's an MMA expert. She's this, she's that, she's the other thing. Is she not the perfect person to flip Rhea Ripley if you used her right? Would she not be the person that the fans would all go crazy when Shayna Baszler came out and got in Rhea Ripley's face? They would all side with Rhea Ripley. That would be have been the perfect person to flip Rhea Ripley over, Mike.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. I mean, look, we've talked about over the years the number of unforced errors that the WWE has made with it's not just Shayna Baszler. You can go all across the spectrum in the WWE, and it's unforced error after unforced error. And Shayna Baszler is just the latest of this thing where you know what she should have been, and you refuse to do it. I mean, at the end of Ronda Rousey's time there, they actually gave Ronda Rousey Shayna Baszler's gimmick.
Yep. Sure did. Yeah, if Shayna Baszler had been on a tear where she hadn't lost hardly at all, if at all, and if so, only in the rarest of occasions, and was still on that streak of, you know, NXT-type streak that she had, man, she would have been the perfect person to challenge Rhea Ripley. Now it wouldn't even be a contest. Now nobody would care. They'd be like, oh, well, Rhea Ripley will destroy her. That's a shame, and that is an unforced error. So anyway, she's relegated to the tag team. It's a good tag team. Don't get me wrong. They look legit, which is good. That's the one tag team that you could honestly say, if you were in the women's division, well, that's a tag team you probably don't want to run across. Those are two very athletic, very tough women, you know, no-nonsense wrestlers. So that's good. I like the fact that it's a quality tag team. But I do think that both of them could have been top of the line in this women's division. So it's a shame that that's all their worth is being used for now, Todd.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right, Dale. Like you said about Shayna Baszler and everything, and I think Shayna Baszler is better as a heel than a face.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. But can you imagine if they said tomorrow, well, Becky Lynch and Bianca Belair are going to be a tag team permanently? You'd be like, what? What are you talking about? Yeah, it's a great tag team, but, you know, you're taking two major players out of the solo division of the women's division. I feel that way about Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark. They're up-and-comers, yeah. I mean, Zoe Stark is still a little green, but you got two major players there, and it's a shame that that's all they can think to do. Anyway, Jinder Mahal comes out, and he's got Indusheer with him. And I'm telling you, my spidey senses started to go off in this. And I kept saying to myself, why is Jinder Mahal getting this push? Why is Jinder Mahal getting the shot? And I started thinking to myself, they wouldn't take this belt off of Seth Rollins and then instantly have Damian Priest cash in and change the whole Royal Rumble trajectory, would they? And I got to thinking, you know, they just might do that. They just might. So now I'm really watching this intently because I'm saying there's got to be something more than just Jinder Mahal gets under Seth Rollins' skin, he challenges him, he beats him. Well, there wasn't much more than that. They did tease the cash in with Damian Priest coming out to watch the match. No one with him, by the way. Small point, but no one's with him. Then Drew McIntyre comes out. They get into the big fight. And we had that one really good moment where I said, oh, my God, they're going to do it where one of Indus Sheer, I don't know which one, I forget, hit Seth Rollins with the Money in the Bank briefcase. And Jinder Mahal hits his finish. They're going to do it. And then Seth Rollins is going to blame Drew McIntyre or whatever the hell it might be, but they didn't. Seth kicks out. A couple of seconds later, Seth Rollins does the curb stomp, wins the match. I don't know if the match was cut short. From what I hear, Seth Rollins was injured. He was walking on his own power, but he is going to be getting an MRI to discover whether there's any major problems or if it's just a little bit of a tweak or whatever. You can hope that there's no major problem, because if there is, this is bad. This is not the time for it. Royal Rumble's right around the corner. WrestleMania's right around the corner. If Seth Rollins goes out for 2 months, his WrestleMania's done, because he's not going to have enough time to do the push. So I hope that this match, which literally was for nothing, as it turns out, literally for no reason, I hope that doesn't come back to bite them in the ass. If this had been a major match where you say, we have to do this match because this is a critical part of a major storyline where Seth Rollins gets cashed in on or whatever, I get it. But when you get injured in a match that at the end of the day, it meant nothing, that hurts. So we'll see what happens, Mike. I hope Seth's okay, but as it turns out, the match was exactly what we thought it wouldn't be, and that is just really for no reason.
Right, and what I thought when Seth got hurt is that, okay, here's the time, and this is gonna thing. But then again, I also thought, well, Damian Priest is out there. We got the two other guys that are out there. They're gonna attack Damian Priest and try and do something to him, which ends up bringing out the other guys from what you call it. And there could have been a possible setup for a match between, you know, Indus Sheer and the Judgment Day for the tag team titles. You know, but they didn't do that either.
No, that's what I meant. I thought this somehow when they announced this, I said, well, there's got to be more to this. There's going to be a critical piece of the puzzle here somewhere. There is a major storyline portion that's going to fit into this match somehow. Because Jinder Mahal appearing out of the clear blue sky, getting in the ring with Seth Rollins, attacking him and getting a title shot the very next week, was so quick and so out of the blue and so for nothing that I had to think to myself, well, there's a greater plan. They're doing this for a reason, and there must be a reason, so something's going to happen. And it's the main event, which means something major is going to happen. So at the end of Raw, you're like, holy shit, right? So okay, so you had a decent match, and you ended Monday Night Raw the way you ended it. But if this ends up biting you in the ass because Seth Rollins gets hurt because of it, then there's going to have to be a lot of rethinking of why did you do it to begin with if there was no real gain. There was nothing to gain. This is why you don't see Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns is not going to be in Australia. Roman Reigns is not going to be in France. Roman Reigns is not going to do another pay-per-view after the Royal Rumble until WrestleMania, because they don't want to hurt. This is why Cody Rhodes is not wrestling too much. They don't want him hurt. But you put Seth Rollins in against Jinder Mahal for no reason. Again, if there was a major part of a storyline and it had to happen, I get it. You're taking a chance, but you're taking a chance because it's important. You took a chance for no reason. And if it comes back to bite you in the ass, then, Mike, they have nobody to blame but themselves.
They have nobody to blame but themselves. And that's why I thought, you know, we thought that Jinder was going to be by himself, right? Then all of a sudden, here comes in the Sheer with him, right? So that raised my spider sense, you know. And then, of course, we see not only is he holding the tag team belts when he comes out, but he's got his briefcase, right? So he's got those tag team belts, and then the Sheer's there. You know, I was expecting the attack to come, that Enda Shear was going to attack. They're supposed to be heels, and they're about to flip, you know, they're about to flip Damian Priest. Even though it would have set up a title, they're going to flip Damian Priest anyway at some point. And I would have thought that the attack would have hastened that flip because, okay, yeah. The match would have came for Enda Shear for the tag team titles, but obviously they're not going to win, but the match would have came because they attacked Priest, right?
Right. Something. I just thought my real feel was this. My real feel was Seth Rollins was going to get cashed in on before the match was technically over. And then we would see Drew McIntyre attack Damian Priest, and it would just end up in a brawl where you say, okay, well, now we've got all kinds of things going on. Is Drew McIntyre going to win the Rumble? Is he going to go up against Cody? Is he going to go against CM Punk? Maybe he's going against Damian Priest. Well, you know, Seth Rollins is upset about the whole thing, so we don't know. I thought there was a major plot line going to run through this match. Something that was going to make us at least more interested in the Royal Rumble or more curious to the winner or maybe even shake up the title picture. Because I couldn't figure out any other reason why Jinder Mahal would appear and get a title shot instantaneous. So I'm sitting there with bated breath saying, the plot line's coming. Something big's happening. When I saw Drew McIntyre come, I said, here we go. Something big is going to happen. Not sure what, but something's going to happen. Nothing happened. Except Seth Rollins got injured. So now, if you overbooked a match where there was really no plot line to be had and no major piece of a puzzle, and he gets hurt, it's your fault. It's your fault. It was a dumb move. Shouldn't have happened. It was a dumb move. So I'm crossing my fingers that Seth Rollins is just – now, he was putting weight on it. He did walk out on basically his own power. But still, we won't know probably till later on today. And cross your fingers because there will be no end to my complaining if Seth Rollins is out because of this match, because there was no reason to have the match to begin with. It didn't mean anything. In the grand scheme of it, it meant absolutely nothing. It would be like putting Roman Reigns in the ring with some guy like Jinder Mahal who just returned for no reason, and then Roman Reigns ends up getting hurt. What would you say about that? You'd say, well, what kind of an idiot would do that? Well, that's what I'm saying now. What kind of an idiot put Seth Rollins in the ring for no reason and risks him getting hurt when it didn't have to happen? You'll notice they're putting Roman Reigns in a match where really there's four people in the match. He's not even going to have to work that hard. And trust me, he'll be out of the ring more than he's in it. And the reason behind that, got to keep Roman fresh for WrestleMania, make sure nothing could possibly happen to Roman for WrestleMania. He didn't feel that way about Seth. And I know Rollins probably felt, oh, that's no problem. But nobody ever knows. And you err on the side of caution. That's why CM Punk's not in the ring. They don't want him hurt. He's injury prone. That's why Cody Rhodes hasn't really done much wrestling. The major players, Gunther, they're not really having wrestle much. the reason. But you put Seth Rollins in there, and what happens? He gets injured, Todd. So let's hope it's not serious.
Oh, yes, right there. Like you said, this is why some of the major players don't wrestle before big pay-per-views that much. They get injured easily. Like you said, with CM Punk, injury prone.
Or they could at least get injured easily. CM Punk does get injured easily, but, I mean, even the ones that don't get injured easily could get injured. Now, don't get me wrong, this is not Jinder Mahal's fault. Jinder Mahal didn't blow up anything or screw up a move or there was no botches or anything. This is just one of those things. He landed funny and he hurt his leg. Happened to Seth Rollins before, if you remember. So we'll see. Anyway, based upon this Raw, the matches were good. I thought there were certain elements. The Judgment Day stuff was all very good, I thought. But a lot of the rest of the stuff, while the matches were solid enough, there was a lot of confusing writing that was almost backwards, where it felt like the wrong people had the dialogue. And then you throw this match in, which, again, if it wasn't a major piece to the puzzle, I don't know why you did it. Is definitely going to lower my rating on this. I'm going to give this a C+. What was good was very good. What was bad was really head-scratching, Mike. So C+ from me.
I'm going to give it a little bit better, B-. And frankly, you know, all they can hope is that Seth Rollins hyperextended. That's the least that can be, that it can be, is an hyperextended knee, you know. That's what it is. And frankly, the other thing that I'm waiting to see what happens and when she comes in is Naomi, because we know she's coming. You know, and I'd love to see Naomi versus Bianca Belair, or hell, I'd love to see a tag team with Naomi and Bianca.
Still one of their better athletes, and I would expect her at the Royal Rumble. By the way, Bayley and Sasha Banks were both at TNA's Hard to Kill watching her match. So, just interesting. We'll keep an eye on that. Todd, what's your rating?
I'm going to give it a C+.
Yeah, listen, this was a mixed draw. What was good was very good. What was bad sometimes had me scratching my head. It felt like the wrong people picked up the wrong script at times, but it wasn't horrible. Anyway, thanks for listening, and we will see you on Friday with our weekly wrap-up.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.